Welcome back to the Hot Mess to Awesomeness podcast, a show all about inspiring smart, busy women to put their happiness at the top of their to-do list. Join your host and life coach, Dion Thompson, as she chats with amazing women who have figured out how to make their happiness a priority, and more importantly, what it's really like to go from hot mess to awesomeness. And now, on with the show. Welcome, everybody, to the Hot Mess to Awesomeness podcast. I'm your host and life coach, Dion Thompson. Today's episode is brought to you by the Awesomeness Academy Podcast Club. It is an exclusive community just for listeners of this podcast who are ready to put be fucking happy at the top of their to-do list. Now, it's free to join, and as a member, you'll get some awesome discounts on courses and workshops and coaching. You'll get exclusive access to special episodes and cool content. Plus, you'll be entered to win an awesome gift every month. So check out the link in the show notes and join today. I am just in glory. That's how I feel right now. Oh my goodness. So my guest today, Frances Adams, you chose like some brilliant songs. They were a little bit retro and definitely those kind of tunes that are going to stand the test of time. My children are going to be rocking out to these tunes. I'm so excited. And I felt so flowy and just like I was in it. And we had the version, the Indigo Girls, and it was their live version. I had my eyes closed. I felt like I was at a concert. It was just brilliant.
Yeah, it was great.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, I'm very, very excited to have my guest today. We had a really fantastic chat when we met a little bit earlier to talk about the podcast, and we dove into some serious shit, and it was fantastic. I love those kind of really deep conversations. I often say to people, like, I got two friendship speeds, like general acquaintance, and maybe we smile at each other, to I'm going to tell you all my deep, dark secrets. Like, that's what I got. And we read there, and we went there quickly, and I'm just very grateful for that. So, okay, Frances, I am super excited. You have such a great energy and a great perspective and a very knowledgeable way in which you show up in the world. And I really enjoy, I'm like, give me all the knowledge. And so I geeked out with you and I loved every minute of it. So at a young age, Frances discovered yoga and the joy of moving and breathing mindfully with very little spiritual direction offered at that time. But being very intuitive and empathic, she found this powerful practice to ground and develop awareness of self and spirit. In this modern day age of business, financial gain, and materialism, she has devoted herself to understanding the root of her suffering and the means to bring peace and happiness to her life. And she has been using her knowledge and understanding of the power of yoga to help people to navigate through whatever life dishes up professionally since 1997. Tell us, you got introduced to yoga and breathwork at a very early age, and mm-hmm. then you've now been practicing this now for a fair few years, and having been in business and working through this since 1997, of course, that's a significant chunk of time to be focusing mm-hmm. on this energy work. I'm excited to hear about what shifted you and what prompted you to go on this journey for yourself.
Yeah.
And then now it is how you share your gifts with the world and give us this opportunity to learn from you. So tell, my friend.
Well, you know, it was a couple of years ago when I started working on the online program that I'm actually now offering, because a lot got in the way. But I was doing, you know, the work in the course, and I was doing this section about who are you. And, you know, I have not really pursued the normal things that people pursued in life, careers, right, for instance. And I had my children late too. And really, I'm, you know, like trying to make sense of what my life really is, right? Like, I was really seriously trying to figure it out. And all of a sudden, I went, oh my God, I'm a wizard. Yes, I'm in a marketing course, and the guy says, oh, where's your hat? Where's your wand? And he was like, and I was like, okay. And, you know, I said, it's not about, you know, a hat and a wand to me. So wizardry is that ability to see things clearly, to understand when your beliefs are taking over, when your automatic responses are taking over, and to be able to interrupt that process calm yourself down, and then deal with what's really actually happening around you. So, and I think my story will sort of explain like how deep these reactions go, because from what I understand, they're pre-thought. So like literally we make decisions before we actually think that we've made a decision, like our body actually can. So my story starts with my mother, who is a wonderful woman. She was a farm girl, and she was beautiful and intelligent and artistic. And she met my father, who was very romantic, dreamer, intellectual. And the two of them got married. And I think my mother felt, I heard the drill. And the two of them got married. And my mother said to me at one point, that she married my father because she felt like he wouldn't control her. And that's interesting. And the first thing that happened after their honeymoon was they had borrowed a car and they were driving, and they were in Alberta where she was from, and he was getting lost. And she said, well, let me drive. And he wouldn't. And they got into a huge fight, and she jumped out of the car and ran into the field screaming. So this is my parents' honeymoon. Now, what happened to me, where I think I got nervous, is damage started actually when I was in the womb. Because their marriage didn't get any better. I was the second child. And while my mother was pregnant with me, they got into a real fight. Like he hit her hard enough to break a rib. And so I think that affects your nervous system. I think it just sort of wakes you up in a way. And as a result, I was a sticky child. Like what my mother would say about me, she would never forget where I was ever. Like she could lose a kid in a grocery store, you know, and have to go, code Adam, but not me, not me. And what I felt was really interesting, because the thing I remember from her was like, glom off, like get off of me, you know? And I was talking, I was online with a friend, and she was like all about, you know, how the whole cartoons and how offensive they could be. And she was going after Pepe Le Pew. And I'm like, listen, like, she's saying, oh yeah, Pepe Le Pew, and he's all over that other, that cat. You know the one I'm talking about.
Yep.
And it's just gross. And I'm like, I was really quiet. And it took me hours to process how I felt about that, because I would have loved Pepe Le Pew. If he had glommed all over me, I would have married him. And that was so painful. I'm telling you, and this was recently, you know, like this little story. That, you know, it's just like, oh, all these layers keep coming out. So when my parents finally did get to divorce, it was really, really hard. My nervous system was on high alert, and I think it started very early, very early. And I think what you end up doing is you're not looking for love, you're looking for that rejection. You're looking for judgment. You're wondering when the trauma is going to start again, you know? And even though my mother and father were nice people, right? But when they got divorced, it was pretty hard for my mom. So I'm going to tell this little story about her, just to give you an example of what it might have been like in 1970 to be the first divorced mom on your block. We had this old travelall, and she could pile all four of us kids into the back of it. And I think at this particular time, like she was going to university, she was trying to look after us kids, and she'd run out of milk. So she had to put us all in the car, because we were like 3, 5, 7, and 9, and go to the store. And on the way there, it broke down and the heater was off, and it was the middle of winter, 20 below. And she was helpless. Like she just described that as one of her worst moments in her life. And the other thing she said to me was like, she grew up on a farm and she raised her little brothers and her sister, and she was really looking forward to having children. And it wasn't fun. It was really, really hard. So the thing is that your nervous system, I think, when you're set for judgment, draws abuse to you. Because you're so vulnerable and you're so reactive. So I was teased and I would blow off. Like I would be like my mother, who ran screaming through that field. People could do that to me. And so it was reinforced, reinforced, reinforced. And by the time I was an adult, I was a pretty angry adult. Mm-hmm. <You know? laughs> And at the same time, I felt something was really, really crucially wrong with me, you know? Like, and I would never be able to please somebody. And I had been told that my temper was too bad. I would never be able to be married. And, you know, I want to go back to 7 years old when I actually found yoga, which was a recording teacher, a recorder teacher. So I was sent off to music lessons at the local church. And it was about a 15, 20 minute walk. And it was winter. And so by 5 o'clock, it was dark. So I would go in the evening in the dark. And this recorder teacher taught yoga. So we started out with yoga.
It's very ahead of its time at that. Like, it, I mean, I've been around for a millennia, but for that to be what children are learning in 1970, it's fabulous. Anyway.
Well, she settled us down. Yeah. Like, we would do this yoga and we would start by being like, all over the place. And by the time she did some yoga with us, and then we didn't do breath work, of course. We were kids. You don't do really specific breath work, but we played the recorder. So we had these long, slow breaths, right? So by the time I left and walked home by myself in these beautiful snowy nights, you know, with the street lights and the blue sky and just that quietness and the crunchingness of the snow, I was literally in a Zen state. Mm. And the thing I remember is the buzz of the, I'd go down the back lane at that time. There were no abductions. Nothing ever happened to me. But I walked down the back lane and these big telephone poles and they buzzed. Mm-hmm. And I would just go up to them. I know it sounds so weird, but I would just go up to them and I'd hold them. I'd put my arms around, I'd hug the phones. I'd just feel that vibration and it just let it, you know, it was so, such a neat feeling. And I would sing. So I sang songs that I made up. Scat, really? I was scat sang all the way home and said, oops. Oh boy. So that was really, I think I might have, okay, I might have screwed up my things.
Okay.
The little orange things came up. Mm. Oops. So it was pretty zen. Yeah, very zen, walking home by myself in the dark. And, you know, I don't think I really wanted to get home very much because, you know, there's all the noisy kids, right, at home and a strung out mother. She and I put myself in her path over and over and over and over again. Seriously. Like, I threw myself in her way for her to release on.
Right.
So then, you know, I'm not going to say that totally changed my life, but I think that in my being, in my whole being, I knew that I could get to that place, you know, like that from that state of nervous upset and anxiety that I almost constantly lived in, that was really peaking during the divorce, that it was possible to change it. So, and that was, my body knew it, not my head. My body knew that. And so when I came into yoga and it got more popular, and by the time I was 16 and I started actually, you know, practicing yoga, I was really familiar with that feeling and I really gravitated towards yoga. So fast forward to me repeating my mother's life. So I got together with a guy. I didn't actually marry him, but we had two children and I left. But we met in Vancouver, so not where I was from, not where he was from. But I came back and I moved in with him and his mother because he didn't have a job at the time. We ended up spending 2 years living with his mother because it just didn't happen, the job that he wanted. And it got more and more toxic because I married a man who I could control. Or who wouldn't control me. Actually, no, it wasn't about controlling him. It was not being controlled, right? Because I'm this free spirit. But when I moved in with his mother-in-law, what I didn't realize was that she would put so much pressure on him that he would start trying to control me. So the marriage was not great in the first place, but it went completely toxic. And so what happened was I ended up fleeing to Winnipeg, where I'm from, with my kids, and thinking that I was going home to where I was safe. And what happened was, it was like jumping into the lion's den instead. Because I triggered all of them. All of them were triggered. So there I was, like, mentally unstable, right? Mm-hmm. Traumatized from being in this toxic, controlling relationship with two little kids, totally isolated in a town that I didn't know, Toronto. I didn't know very many people. And go home to Winnipeg. And, like, literally, they did not want to know me because I was triggering all of their emotional memory of all the trauma. I didn't really know what was going on, right? But I don't want to tell you what happened, but I had to leave. And I went back to Toronto and I ended up living there. And, you know, not really on good terms with my family. And I think part of that is like I talked about drawing abuse. And I think that as you progress, you know, you're not allowing that anymore. You stop, you know, it's drawing towards you out of their patterns, not yours. And it's, you know, like, you're like, no, you know? So yeah. And it made me really, that was the point at which I very shortly met the love of my life, because I did find that place where I, like, was without a family, on my own, with two little kids and no help but welfare, you know, they don't call it welfare, but whatever, but there it was, you know. And I remember I could have kept the kids for Christmas, but I had my parents really did try to have a good divorce, so even though it was my day, I sent them to their family for Christmas because that was me, right? And his family's Jamaican. It was like 50 people, right? So I sent them there and I'm sitting there, you know, having a glass of wine, and I was fine. I was fine, you know, because I just knew that I could do it. I could take care of myself. It's like I'd been through the fire. And it was funny because I wrote a blog at that time called Are We All Alone? And I was adamantly like, no, we're not. But I think that there was a part of me that was going like, yeah, well, you're alone. And then what I developed out of that was that the strength was I can make any relationships I need to. Mm. I can do it. I have the skills. I have the talent. I can make connections. I can be loved, you know. And I'm laughing because another real healer in my life was my little dog. She was so aggressive when we got her. And the story of how we got her is just like, I had to sort of save her from the rescue because they were so mean to her. Like, they were throwing pots and pans at her crate. And I was like, and she was this horrible little dog. And I just kept giving her love and she just bonded to me. And I realized, well, like, if I can love this horrible little dog and she's getting better, well, then that's why people can love me and I can accept their love. Because no matter if I'm, you know, have anger issues or emotional, like, if I get triggered, I can, like, if my nervous system gets triggered to that, and it happens, it's just I'm much, much better at recovering and managing and preventing, but it's not like it doesn't happen. But because it's not my brain, you know, like, now when I start to get stressed out, I go, okay, what do I do to calm myself down? What do I do to nurture my body? Like, I'll think of all these past things, and that's not the problem. Problem is in my body, if I get stressed, it remembers old pain. It creates all those thoughts. So, but knowing that and working with that, I can be much healthier. All my relationships are much better. The last time I had a little bit of an outburst, I afterwards went to my son and I said, I'm sorry, I yelled at you. And I said, but this triggered me and that triggered me. And he said, yeah, I knew I was wrong. So he's kind of trained to understand, to step back and not, like, if I go ballistic, we were all trained to deal with my, my issues, you know, And yeah, like, that sounds like I'm still crazy. Well, maybe, but much, you know, doing really, really well. And so loving, being able to, you know, literally, I know what to do when it starts to go, even if I do kind of go off, half an hour, man. And I'm like out the door with the dog, going for a walk, doing some yoga, whatever it is. I recognize it for what it is. It's stress is happening now. It doesn't have anything to do with that old stuff. I'm fine. I'm okay. I'm acceptable. People love me. Right. What's that line from Saturday Night Live? And by golly, people like me.
Like me, yes. You're golly. It's so your story is very fascinating to me, and how you've woven it together with your knowledge now, right? So as we look back on our stories through the lens of now, it obviously allows for much more understanding and contextualization. And so for you to be able to look at that relationship with your mother from, you know, womb on, and see the patterns that evolved and how they not created, but how it manifested then in your
caused, maybe caused.
Yeah, it
cause and effect. There was a cause, mm-hmm. and there was an effect, and maybe in a different person it would affect. But yeah, but anyway, go
right.
on.
Right, and because of course, pointed. You know, the experiences that we have, even at that precognitive state, they're still perceptions, and then therefore interpretations. And you're, like you said, if it had happened to somebody else, the result may have been different because of course mm-hmm. it happened to you at a specific mm-hmm. time, location, moment, experience. You processed it through the lens of knowing that you had, again, from an early age, that's often built through emotional awareness. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel mm-hmm. bad, therefore this is bad, or I'm bad, and creating patterns around that to that become truth, that become norm, that become this is what I do. Even mm-hmm. when looking at it, and like you said, you then started to live her, repeat that same scenario, the same pattern, at an early age. It's if you were connected to her because of your similarities, right?
We were so similar.
They're so similar. And you know, we take that in at an emotional and a cognitive level. People may have been said at some point, you're so much like your mother or something along that line. And we really internalize those things. And then no matter what, we start to play out patterns that even though we were there at the first time and we knew it sucked, we still do it anyway, right? Because it's just, I am this, and therefore this is what I do.
Yeah.
And so go ahead.
Well, the nervous system works like this. You drive to work every day the same way. Your body knows how to do it. You don't Yes. have to worry about which way to go. Now, say you have to go and pick up a friend before work. You forget to turn off. You have to turn around and go back.
Yes.
Our emotional responses are exactly the same. Mm-hmm. If I'm triggered, what I did was freak out. And that's what my nervous system would completely go until it had no more energy to do that anymore. Then I would be energyless.
Right.
And then I would be okay. I would find my zero again.
Right.
Right.
And as a pattern, right, because what your body, just like your brain, you know, if you practice something, then you get good at it. Your body functions in the exact same way. Your nervous system, the interaction with your musculature and every element that is your body. When you practice moving and being in a certain way, it gets good at doing that. So yes. Stimulus, response, it's, you know, I'm, let's say, triggered, or I'm up, this is upsetting me, and your body goes, oh, I know what to do when we're upset. We go from here all the way to over there. Yeah. Right. And,
exactly.
And we can't stop until we get there. And the more we do that, of course, something that, you know, was
neurons that fire together, wire together. The more
right.
we do that, the more we do that.
And I think people forget, or maybe they're not even aware, that your body develops a way of being around that. So your
oh, yeah.
muscles form shape. Your gastrointestinal system grows certain bacteria as a result, right? Like how...
Oh, it goes down to the cellular level.
Right.
Our cells have little doorways in them that take in nutrients and then expel waste. Yeah. And if you're used to giving them a certain... I'm going to say food, but it could be even a hormone. Like say you're used to having that adrenaline pumping through you.
Yeah.
You got adrenaline receptors, extra ones, and they expect to get fed.
Right.
So it's a constant process. Like, you got to start feeding yourself something else, you know, which is calm, light, nice hormones, right? Those feel good hormones, you know?
Right. So like for the,
getting that,
the, you know, triggering that parasympathetic, that relax. So it's interesting when, you know, your body gets used to operating in a certain way, even if it's a way that doesn't feel good. Like if you were to interpret it and say, I don't actually feel great here, but it gets used to that. And it becomes a pattern in which we run and we live in, such that when we make those changes, when we start to make those shifts, and especially if we think we're going to do it drastically, like I'm going to stop this and start this, your body will reject it, even though it's actually better, may actually induce joy and all the good feelings and all the good feeling chemicals. And your body goes, "Food, nope, nope, that is not what I'm used to. And therefore I feel really uncomfortable." So that transition time between running a pattern that's not serving you, but it's what you're used to developing a new pattern, a new neurology, a new way of being, it feels like crap.
It can be hard.
It's almost like you want to crawl out of your skin. I don't feel like myself. This isn't what I do. And so, you know, we were talking a little bit before we hit record about, you know, the work that you do now and how it's very all encompassing, understanding the body and the mind and the spirit, because it all plays into that. So your sense of self, how you self-identify, I am the one who rages to the point of puddle, or I am the one who has strategies and tools to get me to calm quickly, right? Those two different self-identifiers. So you can say different things, but your body has to be on board, and you can do things, different things with your body, but your body has to be on board.
Yes. And it's so important, because we can do all the mental work. We can have it totally together. We can understand exactly what we need to do and how to do it. And our body has to be kind of taken along organically, and it brings us to the breath, because it's this unconscious process that we're now asking ourselves to pay attention to and modify, change, maybe even control. And so we're bringing that awareness down into our body, into our, and our on the level of breath is very internal. And so, you know, a lot of exercise is very, very good for you, but you know, it's all a lot of exercise is up from the outside. Okay, I'm gonna make this muscle stronger. I'm gonna get my core going, right? Abs, abs, abs. You know, when you work organically with the breath, see, because when you breathe in, you expand your chest. If you raise your arms, you expand. Yeah, do it. Yeah, lift your arms up.
If you're just listening, I'm totally doing it.
Yeah, she's doing it. And that, so it's working with the breath. So you don't have to like force your arms and shoulders to do it. It's kind of like you're moving with the breath. And it comes, all I can tell you is from experience, that working with it and working with it, repeating it. And so I don't meditate on anything but the breath, really. I mean, once in a while, chanting with the breath. Right. Because of course, chanting is making sound. But like, I don't do candle flames, you know. I just do my yoga breathing meditations and then sit and see if I feel zen for a while.
When on the journey, did you really come to this strong awareness? Because I know at 7, you came to a almost like a body awareness, like you knew it felt good. But of course, at 7, we're not necessarily in control of what we get to do all the time. So not being able to feel like you could do it whenever you knew you needed it, because again, what was that like? But you know, you had gone through these sort of trying times in your relationship with the young kids and repeating some patterns that as an adult you may have been able to, and maybe you did or didn't. And that might be the first question, is when did you look and go, oh, I'm repeating this. This isn't just mine. This is me reliving someone else's story. So that I'm curious about
well,
when that
it was semi-conscious of the fact that, you know, like that I married a man not of my hometown and moved to a place where I had no built support network for myself built that paralleled my mother's. Mm-hmm. I don't think it grew on me that the realization that, like, I always knew that my dad's mom was horrible to my mother, right? And the sister too, they were horrible to her. And you know, it never really occurred to me that that's sort of that I think it was recently that I realized, oh yeah, the pattern was the same. Like, I had a man who was a softie. He would have done anything I wanted him to. Put me in the situation where his mother's there to try to control him. My dad sucked his thumbs as a baby, and they put cages on them in those days. So he had metal apparatus around his hands in order to stop him from self-soothing. So this is, you know, kind of where he comes from. I mean, control at a really, like, they had no objections to doing anything they wanted, controlling them. You know, I think we've changed that way with our children, right?
Right.
But at that time.
So you, and I can appreciate that the awarenesses that we gain, they're layered, right?
They're layered.
And it really does expand as we learn more and as we grow more. When would you say, you really turned to breath work and to yoga, where you knew, like, you were making this conscious decision, like, this is my thing? Because of course I'm looking at it as a significant pattern interrupt, right? An opportunity to shift the way things are done.
So up until my divorce, or when I left my husband, which would have been about 2007, I did the normal kind of yoga, and I mostly taught yoga, and I would do yoga at home once in a while. But doing yoga in our society is about being in a classroom doing yoga. Hardly anybody gets that that's not actually the heart of yoga. The heart of yoga is to do it by yourself, with yourself, totally focused on yourself. And you can't do that in a classroom anyway.
Right. So it's just not the norm. Yeah. Like, it's not the popular, or I mean,
well, you have to be taught. So, right. So, you know, people don't experience in my classes quite the same way, because I'm not just focused on the experience you're having, but I'm focused on making sure that you're accurately getting the techniques, because they work, right? So if you're not accurately getting the techniques, taking them home and practicing them, you're not getting it. So it's as much teaching as practicing when it's a class. So I started practicing on my own with the breath. I went to a yoga conference, and I met a Mark Whitwell, who does the Vinny yoga. And he was this, like, gorgeous man, like 70 something years old. God, he had long hair. He came in a white shirt and khaki pants, just not in any yoga tights or anything. And oh, he was sexy, man. He just, and he had the reputation, like, he's not always held in high esteem because of his, but I don't think he made any bones about it. He wasn't marrying people in that, you know, it was serial monogamy, as far as I could tell. But anyway, I digress. And I couldn't do headstand. I've never really been able to do headstand. And I'm in this group, and I'm in an advanced yoga class, and I've been doing yoga for God knows how many years, and I can't do yoga. And I'm in the middle of this toxic relationship, and I just started to bawl. I just, like, ended up on the ground weeping. And, you know, he just did this breath work. He just did it. And I just took it home. And he said, these are the four. It was yoga therapy. And there were complaints. There were all these complaints from the yoga teachers who thought they were going to learn yoga therapy. And I'm like, what are they complaining about? He said, it's the breath. Ujjayi sound. So it's this little soft sound you make. And it slows down the breath. The pausing. So we have these techniques. Linking the movement to breath. So I showed you, you know, we breathe in as the arms go up, we breathe out as they go down, there's a pause in between, and even breath. So four elements to yoga therapy. Mm-hmm. And then we just did a bunch of yoga using those elements. And they were like, well, what do you do for a bad back? What do you do for a shoulder? What do you do for the knees? And it's like, breathe, breathe. And it's true. And so I ended up looking for another teacher in his tradition, and I found my teacher Rosemary, and I stuck to her. And, you know, I do all kinds of like self-exploration. I love all kinds of alternative healing, but I just love her. I mean, she's so simple. She just teaches you yoga. And I'll say like, oh, you know, I'm coming back from my mother's funeral. Oh, you know, I'm so estranged from all my family and I'm all angry at them and I don't know what to do. And she says, well, you have your family here, right? Yeah, okay, and then here's some yoga. It's just like, you know, no analysis. Come on, just do your yoga. Just forget about that. Just let that go. Just do your yoga. And so she's my model. She's my, you know, who I try to follow, and she's so simple. When I had those little kids, she would say, yes, you know, it's hard with little kids. You're stressed out. That's okay. You know, just take it easy. You didn't have to.
It sounds like it was in and of itself, I know that breath work is not, it's complex while being simple, which I find fascinating because, of course, when you turn your attention to it, because you're already, for the most part, you're breathing all the time.
Except for when we're not.
Right. And that's right. So turning your attention to being intentional about it. I think that there's a lot of power there. So what would you say was the significant impacts in your world as a result of taking on this new way, these developing these new patterns of behavior to offset the previous patterns that were installed?
Yeah. So according to yoga, those previous patterns are called samskaras. I love that. I got samskaras. And we never remove them. You know, it's like a tree growing in a certain kind of soil or that has some type of too much wind or something, and it grows a little bit crooked or whatever. But we cover them over. Like we can kind of cover them over so that we respond in a different way. And so, I mean, I find that helpful because, you know, I did try to change so much in my life. You know, like I really spent my whole life just trying to change who I was because I didn't think it was right somehow. Like I didn't know why. Sometimes I even thought like I secretly have a kind of cancer that one day they're going to say, yeah, you had it all along and we couldn't tell you, you know. The impact was to take my attention, which was focused outside always, and to turn it inside. And the thermometer or the gauge, what I look for information is my breath and my body to know how stressed I am. And if I hear the thoughts in my head that are those negative thoughts, I know that I'm stressed, like I might not be sleeping, you know, having that awareness within. And so I really was always out there. You know, what does Dion think of me? Does she like me? I probably still think that. I remember not even so recently, a really outgoing woman, a beautiful art dealer with an art gallery. And I went to visit her to see her art gallery. And we were like, oh, we're so alike. And she said, yeah. And it's like, everybody loves you, don't they? I can tell, but not everybody, right? But that doesn't matter because like we were so the same. And I said, oh, yeah, it does. Everybody has to love everybody. So letting go of that, right? It's a process. But yeah, it's been really recent. I know that I've been turning my awareness inward for a long time, and it's a gradual process. But I think it was when we were chatting a month ago that it was like, click, oh, it's my attention isn't focused out at everybody else and how I can please them or how I might be disappointing them anymore. It's in here.
Would you say that your shift of attention from external to internal, has that played a role in your capacity for self-love and self-acceptance? Because, you know, what I heard before was I tried to change myself. There was something wrong with me. I thought I was cancer. But what I'm hearing now and what I'm seeing in the work that you do, that you've taken on, like, this is me. And then these are the tools that, and my visual of that tree in the wind and how you sort of wrapped these new patterns around and created strength in an area that was once you would have perhaps deemed as a weakness. Mm-hmm. How much did the breath work play a role in your capacity to do that? Is that still part of?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's everything. Like, I honestly think you don't do it with your head. You do it with your body. You get past trauma with your body and your breath. And I don't even know that it's, and I love my stories and I tell my stories, but I'm not, you know, sure how much healing came from that. But I know the central core was to move energy with my body freely. Like where all of that low self-esteem and insecurity was is here, you know? And if I can let energy flow through me, you know? And I mean, I journal every day. I do yoga almost every day, except for when I'm intentionally taking a break. I go for a walk. Mm-hmm. Like every single day, I've got this huge self-care thing going on. And like, I don't know, this might be interesting to you, but I actually sometimes think I'm journaling from the womb person because it'll start like, I'll start doing like messiness. I'll just start all over the place. And I'll be like, what do you want to say? What do you want to say? Do art. Do. That's what it says. That's what that part of me wants. I mean, we circled around to what I think the core of mental wellness is art and creativity. And there's three pillars: art and creativity, nature. So you heard me say I go for a walk, right? It's like a go-to. And relationships. I think human beings, we're like, it's about relationship. All our happiness is about relationships, and it has to start with yourself. And then when you are like kind of moving from who you are and what you want, people love it. People love it. They don't want that other person who was trying to please them, really.
Yeah.
They want you.
And, you know, I was speaking to someone earlier today about fitting in and belonging. And, of course, that idea of accepting yourself for who you are and loving those parts of yourself that in the past others may have deemed not worthy. And knowing that you have strength and that you are worthy of love and attention and respect and all of the things that comes with being a human.
Yes.
And when you connect to the people who see and hear and value you for who you are, it makes all the difference. And for many of us, we develop these patterns of, and as you had said, you know, that your nervous system was sort of predetermined to attract people who were not going to be kind to you. And then you, as a result, sought out more of that. And then it brought in more and sought out more and brought in more. So mm-hmm. when we get into these patterns of going external for validation and love and attention, and then constantly trying to fit into other people's ideals of what is okay and not okay, we can lose sight of who we are truly and the gifts that we bring to the world.
Yeah. If you're even asking that question, who am I? And I think so many of us are, you know, then we've got work to do, mm-hmm. right? We've got work to do because, you know, like I look at the young kids today and like people talk about how they don't have the work ethic and stuff like that. And it's because like, I think they're being raised not to be abused, you know, and there's a sensitivity to their own flow and their own energy. And then we live in this world, which is trying to, I think that almost, I think even being an entrepreneur is a type of slavery because we live in this society that has got all these constraints for us. Right. So I know another topic. I better not go there.
Frances, I've really enjoyed your perspective and the journey that you've taken to move through your trauma, past trauma, and how it has woven itself through you along with the breath work and the yoga and the strategies and the love and the self-acceptance, and how that now, you know, being at that space where you are looking inward consistently and again, using these tools to keep yourself moving forward. And grateful that you are doing this work. And I know that you're supporting others to do the same. So tell me a little bit about what's going on for you and how you're supporting people right now.
Yeah, well, you know, I was working on that course all those years ago when I had that aha moment, like I think I'm a wizard, that's what I really am. And my mom died just as I was kind of trying to do all the videos, and I lost it. And I picked it up again. Actually, I was kind of ready to get back into the world and get started again on everything. I mean, I'm lucky enough that, you know, I'm now married and didn't have to worry about things. I could leave off teaching yoga for a while and just take that time to process. You know, my mom died, we moved, and then my dad died. Mm. And so just when COVID hit, like literally I started working again on the course, and I thought, okay, well, I guess this is fine because people are going to need online courses. So I was really excited, and I changed the name from Yoga for Creativity to Yoga for Mental Wellness. So I don't know, mental wellness, creativity is the same thing.
And for many of us, it is, right? And interesting, my experience with tapping in and supporting people through their creative endeavors, most people, adults, because we're conditioned to problem solve in a way that everybody is comfortable with. And so our creativity is conditioned out. And so when I talk to people about, you know, programs to support creativity, they're not in. Because they don't even see that as a problem.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So, but you know what? If you're creatively blocked, you often feel depressed or anxious. So therefore, right. I thought, well, let's go for yoga for mental wellness, and let's forget that mental wellness has a stigma, because this is COVID and we're all going crazy. Yeah. So, and I've got a 12-week program that's, it doesn't have to be just 12 weeks. It's a combination of video lessons and private lessons. And there's a few group lessons, so we can all kind of know each other in the journey. But the heart of it is, of course, that, you know, I can teach personally, and then it's backed up. So you can review what you're learning weekly. There's, you know, 2 30 or 40 minute classes for you to go through at your own pace. And I think it's really convenient and flexible for people. So
that sounds fantastic. I mean, and you had said earlier about the focus for your teachings is so that people can feel confident with the tools so that they can continue to do them and develop their practice.
Yeah. Independence.
And so for those individuals who are looking for that, this is fantastic. I mean, yeah. I get it. Not everybody has their own desire when it comes to yoga. Some people may be like, no, I only do it the once a week, and then that's solid, and I do it with my class.
Yeah, that's
and of
true.
Course, that's fantastic. And what they're going to get with you is this opportunity to, in a variety of settings and ways, to be able to
that's right. Take it home.
Yeah.
Because it is the repetition, right? It is the repetition. The neurons that fire together wire together. And so you just have to just repeat. And even if you do 2 minutes is better than every day, it's better than kind of sporadically or changing around. Oh, I'll try Tai Chi now. Oh, let's see what hot yoga is like. Oh, let's try this. Stick with one thing. It doesn't have to be my yoga, but stick with something till you're really sure that it's not gonna, don't just flirt around from thing to thing, because that repetition is so powerful. You will progress. You almost won't even notice you're progressing. And of course, if you're repeating something like yoga, you're having that benefit of feeling good at the same time.
Right. And as I say often, and this is not news, but what you practice, you get good at. the other caveats, though, are you get to decide what to practice. And the reality is you're always practicing something. So you are either practicing breath work or you're practicing not doing breath work. And you will get good at either, depending
That's
on
right.
what you choose to practice. And so if you're not making the conscious decision, then you will make the unconscious one that you've always gone with. And you know, this, and what an opportunity. And so thank you.
Well, you're welcome. But I guess the last thing I wanted to add was, you know, like people think what they have to have a job or something like this, but go straight for what feels good, right? Like taking responsibility, finding that independence. And like I said, like when I kind of took responsibility for how I felt, that's when I met somebody.
Right.
Like it was really instant. So
that is some very wise words, some words that I live by. So I'm super grateful that you shared that. Thank you so much, Frances. I have enjoyed this immensely.
Me too, Dionne. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for tuning into this amazing conversation with Frances today. Be sure to join us over in the Awesomeness Academy Podcast Club. The link is in the show notes. And remember to put be fucking happy at the top of your to-do list. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the show. Join Dionne again next week to learn more about what you can do to go from hot mess to awesomeness.